On this episode of the Autumn Windbags, we look back at the good, the bad, and the ugly from the terrible Titans loss in Nashville. We also discuss Darren Waller's terrible hands. And also, we have the ultimate Derek Carr debate. And we love when you subscribe, rate, and comment on whatever platform you're listening on. All right, here we go.
I got a dream of winning a Super Bowl. I got a dream of being in a Pro Bowl. I'm really not into dreams anymore, okay? I'm into nightmares.
Caught! Touchdown! Raiders!
You're listening to the Autumn Windbags, an audio attack from the Silver and Black. Here are your windbags, RJ Clifford and Juan Soto.
Yeah, it is another episode of the Autumn Windbags. RJ Clifford, Juan Soto. Let's have some fun today. If I look a little red or a little tan, it's because I went to Raiders Titans in Nashville. Nashville. Top three American city.
Great city.
Absolutely love Nashville.
Fun.
Music's great. Bar scene's awesome.
Food good.
The sister lives there, and it worked out perfect. Had the weekend off. The Raiders were in town. Haven't visited the sister yet in her new home city. Like, worked out perfect. That Nissan Stadium, trash.
Garbage.
Concessions are shit. Maybe it also didn't help that it was like 87 degrees and we were just like staring right at the sun. Like, I'm just sitting there like shirtless, just like using my shirt as just like a rag, just like trying to squeegee off my face.
Sopping up your face.
Yeah. So like, and we got there Saturday night, went to the game Sunday. So got back this morning. So didn't start off the weekend great, but the rest of the week went awesome. Nashville's a good town.
Yeah, it's a fun city, man. I've always had a good time. I've been there a few times. And I've never not had a good time.
Raiders
People. Everyone's nice. Like, I don't know. It's the way their downtown is set up. It's perfect.
Yeah.
Walk.
Hit up Broadway. Partied my ass off.
Great parking. Like, nothing you don't have to worry about. It's a good setup. It's a good city.
The Raiders have some amazing away games this season. Like, L.A., Denver, Kansas City, good cities, and then Nashville, obviously, New Orleans.
Yeah.
Seattle. Some good towns.
Seattle's a fun town, man.
Yeah.
I don't know about Kansas City in December. It's fucking rough, dude. It's cold as shit out there.
So my sister married a country singer. That's why she moved to Nashville. And so we went and saw him perform. He performed right on Broadway at the stage. Had a great time. And I had my almost three-year-old daughter take their tip bucket that they have in front, and she picked it up and had her just walk through the bar with the tip bucket. Bitch made over $100. Just adorable little like three-year-old girl in pigtails and cowboy boots walking around. People could not get their money out fast enough. So if anyone wants to lease out my kid, I'll give you a great deal.
Yeah, the points aren't bad.
She will hustle. She will hustle.
She's a Clifford.
For you. She's just that good. All right, question of the day. And this is the question that will be pinned down in the comment section. Let us know what you think. Which Raider has surprised you the most with his play? Good or bad, which Raider surprised you the most? Either you had low expectations and they exceeded them, you had high expectations and they didn't, or maybe another reason why they surprised you. Maybe you thought they'd be a pretty good run stopper, but they turned out being a great, pass stop or whatever it may be, right? Which Raider has surprised you the most with his play? Soto?
Chandler Jones, man. Chandler Jones has been bad. Not only have his stats been poor, when you watch the game, it's a wonder he's gotten the stats that he's gotten. Mm-hmm. He a lot of times does nothing. He engages with the offensive lineman, and that's where it ends. It's got to be Chandler Jones for me.
He had half a dozen pressures on Sunday, which was a massive uptick for him, which is still not technically a stat. It's still like... It's disruptive and it's good. It's a good contribution, but it's not like it's a sack or a tackle or a pass deflected.
I mean, let me edit that real quick. It can be disruptive. Just a pressure by itself, a pressure is not disruptive. It can be, and that's why you have to make that. That's why you have to watch the tape, because when I watched the tape, his pressures weren't anything to write home about. He didn't get any quarterback hits, so those pressures were like close enough for him to be able to tackle the quarterback before he threw the ball or after, right? I mean, after he threw the ball.
I think that's going to be a very popular choice, Chandler Jones. I'll go a little different. I'm going to go Nate Hobbs. He had a great rookie season for a rookie. And we all kind of, you know, the general rule is the biggest jump is from rookie year to year two. That's, you get your feet under you. You get 1 year of, like, what it's like being a pro, and you take that big jump. His jump has been bigger than I could even possibly imagine. They moved him from slides, basically playing outside corner at this point, right? Mm-hmm. So he moved his position more or less. Holding it down with a bunch of other DBs that are all, like, young or new. And he's still, like, one of the best run stoppers as a DB.
Yeah. Like, he gets in there.
He's still a, like, he's an outside cornerback that can cover almost anybody, and he's one of the best run stoppers as a DB in football. Like, that, again, we expected him to be good, right? There's a reason why the Raiders let Mullen go and, you know, let some other DBs go. Didn't really make any giant signings other than Rock Ya-Sin, and that's not even, like, a giant signing, right? I think because they had
been good. He's
been good, but it wasn't a giant splash, right? It was just, you know, we just basically took him off of the Colts' hands more or less, so they can take Yannick's contract money or take that tab. But yeah, as I had reasonably high expectations for Nate Hobbs, and they even exceeded that.
Yeah, he's been really good. He's strong. He was one of the best in the league statistically last year. Mm-hmm. And I don't see him slowing down at all this year.
All right, so that's the question. Which Raider surprised you the most with his play? Let us know. Comment section. You know the drill. All right, well, it's time for the good, the bad, and the ugly. Raiders moseyed on into Nashville along with the Clifford crew and walked away a loser. 0-3. Yeah. The only 0-3 team in football. Technically the worst team in football based on pure like standings, if you will. I don't think they're not the worst team in football, but technically by standings they are. But still a lot to like in this game, even though we still couldn't get it done. So start it off, Soto.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, yeah, we are the worst team. However you want to look at it, a team can be great on paper, but they got to play. And the teams that beat us only have one win, mm-hmm. and it's against us. Every single team that we've lost to, they're all 1-2, and each one of their wins was against us. That goes to show you that, we're 0-3, but it's not, we played well. Well, guess what? None of the teams that we've lost to have beaten anybody else. So it goes to show you we've been playing really, really bad. So we're going to start with the good.
We're the chick that has taken the virginity of, like, four dudes in college. It's like, these are a bunch of dudes who, like, couldn't get laid in high school, and she's finally, like, boning them all. We're that hoe bag.
God damn it, bad.
Just taking loads from a bunch of virgins.
I don't know about all that, but it is pretty bad.
That's a good analogy, Soto. Don't write it off.
I think it's okay. We're going to start with the good, like we do every single time. All right, the good. Derek Carr, 303 yards and 2 touchdowns. So good job there for Derek Carr.
Best game of the year for him. And even stuff you don't see in the stat line, like, he was moving in the pocket so much better this game than he did the last two, evading, you know, rushes. And we'll get to the ugly, but that should have been 4 touchdowns for him, right?
Could have easily been 4. Yeah,
could have easily been 4 touchdowns. And also, I'm gonna give him the no turnover applause, because the interception that he had, 100% on Waller, 100% perfect pass right into his hands. It wasn't a kind of 50-50 ball or kind of a tough catch. No, it was perfectly in his hands, in stride, in the end zone. Volleyball set interception. Back-to-back games for Derek Carr with no turnovers that were his fault, which is amazing. Like, how often do you have back-to-back games with no turnovers last season? Like, it doesn't, it was happen.
Earlier in the year he did it, yeah. But
hopefully week one was an eye-opener for him, and he got his shit together, and he's like, made the adjustments.
Yeah, initially I said it was like an 80-20. I kind of softened on that to like a 90-10. There is something to be said for situation and defense and ball placement. You would want to, in a perfect world. First, I want to say this: Darren Waller should have caught that ball. I want to get that out there. In a perfect world, that ball would have been lower, so Waller could protect himself after he catches the ball, and the screaming linebacker would not have come into play. That's where the ball should have gone in a perfect world, but that ball should have been caught 10 out of 10 times.
If it were lower, Waller's head would have been lower. It would have been helmet to helmet, so we could have gotten a penalty. But also probably Waller being concussion protocol with the rest of our team. We'll get to that later.
No, I don't think so. It's not an arguable fact here. The ball, when in that instance, the ball should be lower. But we have more. Max Crosby was the man. He led the team in tackles with 9 for the defensive end position, 5 solo, 2 tackles for loss, 1 quarterback hit, 1 forced fumble. Max Crosby was all over the place, as he always is. And I think we are seeing before our very eyes someone kind of transforming and pushing through into that superstardom.
The most consistent player on our team. I guess you can count Daniel Carlson. If you count kickers, then maybe it's a neck and neck race. But he's the one guy that you can count on every single week. Oh, we're going against a run team. Still count on him. Oh, we're going against a passing team. Still count on him. Like, no matter what the situation is, he will produce. Like, he will be disrupting plays. And that's a sign of what should be a good defense, when your defensive end is leading in tackles. Not your safeties, not your corners, not a DB. The guy with his hand in the dirt leading in tackles. That motherfucker's making plays.
Yeah, and that kind of leads me into the other good, our second half defense. We allowed, for the second time, we allowed no points in a half. And the second half against the Titans, we allowed 0 points. So great job for the defense there in the second half. Josh Jacobs didn't get a lot of touches as many touches as we would like. But good game, 13 carries for 66 yards. That's like 5 yards a rip. He had 5 catches for 31 yards, 6 yards catch.
And he was sick all week. Didn't even show up till like the day before.
I think if he would have been, a little bit more plucky, he would have gotten the ball a little bit more. But, I mean, what else do you want than 5 yards of carry and 6 yards of catch if you're a running back? So good job by Josh Jacobs.
I wonder if McDaniels is trying to keep Jacobs fresh for the long season because he's so injury prone, or if he just doesn't trust anybody else. Because we're just not running the ball that often, even when Josh is having good games. Like, when he's got momentum and doing well, he's just not doing it.
Well, I mean, we also fell behind. We gave up 3 touchdowns in 3 possessions, mm-hmm. the first 3 possessions in this last game. So, I mean, considering that, he ran the ball quite a bit, considering that the first 3 times out in the field, the Titans scored a touchdown. So, still a great job by him. Hopefully his volume goes up and his production stays the same, so he can get more yardage out of his touches. Mac Hollins, Jesus Christ.
Career game.
8 catches, 158 yards, and a touchdown. He was not only was he open, he caught passes when he was covered. He caught passes off of people's backs, off of people's heads, over his shoulder, where I had no clue how. If the sun was positioned where you said it was, I don't know how he caught that ball. But man, Mac Hollins comes through big time.
He was flagrantly PI'd on that touchdown catch. Like,
yeah,
that dude was all over him. Still got the ball, gave him the like, get off me. Like, little, like, catches, he's like, get the fuck off
me.
Like, one of these things, you know? Right. Acting like he's been there a million times when it's a career day, you know?
It's like his, like, 3rd touchdown in his career or something.
So that bomb in the 4th quarter that you were talking about, that, like, 50-yarder that, you know, we were in 4th and 15 to, like, mm-hmm. you know, still make it a game. I was sitting right there. Like, I was in the 100 section in that corner of the end zone. It was, like, right, you know, 50 feet in front of me, right? And the way he was running and, like, he had the wherewithal not to look over his shoulder, because if he looked over either shoulder, he wouldn't have seen it. He went straight back, and I was perfectly there to see the angle. I was seeing the ball come off like a yard and a half to his right, and he was like, ugh! And just got, like, followed it perfectly. like literally the opposite of a Zay Jones. Like Zay Jones can't follow the ball at all. He just kind of goes. It was like zoom, just zeroed in on it and made this catch, like the most impossible catch to make in football. Or you're just looking, you're not having a true line of sight. You have to adjust as you go.
Trying to pay him the big bucks, man. Yeah. Excellent. Excellent work.
How crazy it if Matt Collins is like that good on top of having Hunter, Darren, and Devontae, and Mac just like you can count on him for 100-150 yards if you need him.
Well, he is that good. He's shown he is. He's already shown us what he can do. So does he have to have 150 something yards every game for us to say it was a good game from him? No. He has to produce when his number is called. He's got to do what we've seen he can do, which is make the play, not just run the route, but make the play happen. Speaking of making the plays happen, Daniel Carlson again, perfect, 3-for-3 field goals, 1-for-1 extra points. Didn't kick anything out of bounds. Daniel Carlson, good to you, sir. Another perfect day for our kicker, our all world kicker.
There's only three people on the Raiders where I can say we cannot improve beyond this person. Devontae Adams, Max Crosby, Daniel Carlson. And we have some really good players that I don't want to get rid of, right? But Denzel Perryman, the best linebacker in football? No. Is Hunter Renfro the best slot receiver in football? No. Carlson, Max, Devontae. I would not trade them for anybody.
Yeah, I'm just super impressed by Max Crosby, man. Like we're seeing it right now. We're seeing his development. This is, you know, how a guy that's a superstar. This is if they don't come on the scene like that. Like if they're not like a Micah Parsons, right? Mm-hmm. This is how they do it. They start doing one thing really well, and that one thing leads to other things being done really well. What was the thing on Max? Oh, he's a pass rusher, but man, he's too small. He can't stop the run. Nope. Can't say that anymore because he's got tackles for loss. He's got quarterback hits. He disrupts running plays where it makes other guys. So he's like a defensive tackle. What he does, he ruins the running play, and other guys are able to make the tackle. So you can't say that about Max Crosby anymore. He has a well-rounded stud on defense at defensive end. All righty, there's the good. When you have good, you also got to have bad. Duality. You know about duality?
The duality of man. I don't know what it good is, but I know it's a thing.
Yeah. Well, there is no good without bad. There is no bad without good. So you got to have the good. You got to have the bad. Okay. Our first half defense, as good as the second half defense was, the first half defense, not so much. Wasn't all against the run either. We'll get to a couple of these things, but I don't know why Patrick Graham had us in that zone. Tannehill was shredding that zone up. And I understand that you want to keep your DBs facing the ball carrier. Mm-hmm. When you're in man, a lot of times the receivers don't even block. They just run around like, oh yeah, I'm going deep, and the corner just fucking follows them and takes them out of the play. Mm-hmm. But when they played man in the second half, that's when we blanked them. But first time we're in a lot of zone. We got picked apart. Fucking Tannehill looked like Tom Brady on the play action. Gave him 24 points in the first half. That's bad. No, nothing for me.
I mean, I don't know what else bad to say. They just played soft, right?
That's like, what I'm saying. They played in the zone, a soft zone. It was
scheme
bad.
And there were scheme and strategic errors, but like soft zone and also soft like physically. Just getting pushed around, you know. Low effort. It's just like, I don't know.
It was rough.
He got to him. I don't know.
That was the beginning of the game, man. He shouldn't get to you that fast. You had a little pre-party, though. Jonathan Abram, two bad missed tackles on third downs that would have stopped the drives from continuing. Ultimately, they were in the second half, and those drives didn't lead to points for the Titans. But you have to take a look at the time the Titans were able to eat off the clock that kept us from giving more chances and more opportunities to score. So that was pretty bad. I thought we kind of saw the last of that, but it reared its ugly head That was pretty bad. This is his two missed tackles.
If Denzel Perryman played, do we win?
Who knows, man? I think we would have had a much better job on Derrick Henry, especially early in the game. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't Derrick Henry that killed us. It was the passing game that killed us. It was that soft zone that we were in that killed us.
Henry had 85 yards. You know, it was a factor. But you're right. Like, our DBs made Ryan Tannehill look like Tom Brady, especially in that first half.
Bro, it was crazy how wide open these guys were. Dude, freaking Robert Woods, I was saying how washed he was, and he had a pretty damn good first half. Mm-hmm. It's rough, man. Derek Carr. Now, he wasn't the good for the stats that I said, but Derek Carr had a sub-60% completion percentage and a sub-7 yards per attempt. He threw the ball 44 times to get those 300 yards. Mm-hmm. And I don't care who you are as a quarterback, sub-60% completion percentage and sub-7 yards per attempt, that's pretty bad. Rory, I'm upset that Rory's not here because Illuminor, his boy, two more freaking penalties, one more at the goal line. This guy is the new Leatherwood with his goal line penalties, him and Parker. He all rolled into one. So Illuminor's got to clean that up, man. He's not that good of a player that he's going to continue to get consistent playing time making these kind of mistakes.
It was the first time that the Raiders just stuck with their five offensive linemen. And so it may be Illuminor moving forward.
Very well may be. I mean, once James comes back, I think Parham did a good job, man. Parham can slide into that right guard role, I believe. And they really like Thayer Munford for whatever reason. I don't know, but that could be still a platoon at right tackle. But yeah, making those mistakes, it's just, you're not, you know, some stud offensive lineman. Oh, you know, we'll take him not allowing a pressure if he gets a couple penalties type of thing. Like, he's not that guy. Mm-hmm. All right. We heard the good. We heard the bad. Now we got to have the ugly. Darren freaking, I don't have a C on my freaking uniform anymore, Waller. He dropped two, maybe three touchdown passes. Two for sure. The one that was kind of that mix-up between him and Devontae Adams in the corner of the end zone. It's a good thing that he tried to catch it too, because Devontae Adams was out of bounds. And then the other one, which is like, they went off his hands and got intercepted. Those are two drop touchdowns. Also, the long pass where he, I don't know, it was kind of a weird kind of attempt on his end. It didn't seem like it was too far over him to be able to try to catch it with two hands. He went and tried to catch it with one. It was kind of an awkward attempt at the catch. He was behind the DB, and Waller's fast enough to run away from a DB. He's big enough and fast enough to be able to make a touchdown on that play. So that's why I say he dropped two, maybe three touchdown passes. That's ugly.
After you didn't see it on the broadcast, but after that first drop, Carr's waiting on the sideline and Waller's coming in, hands on his hips, kind of head down. Like, he just dropped a touchdown pass, right? Carr gives him one of the, you know, gives him the, puts his hand out, tries to give him a high five. He's like, you got this, blah, blah, blah. And Waller just kind of kept his head down, just kind of like, limply put his hand out, touched Carr, and just kind of walked back out. I don't know what his deal was. He just looked down. He just looked out of sorts. He just did not. And he played that way. Like, I'm not a big like body language guy. Like, some guys are rah rah on the field and they suck when they're, you know, blah blah, or like, you know, they're quiet on the sidelines, but they're amazing on the, you know, field. Like, I'm not that big into it, but like, his body language played exactly how he played. Low energy, low effort. Like, he still had a day, like, what, five receptions or something? But it was but Carr kept feeding him. And I think that's what you're supposed to do. Like, when you have a Pro Bowl Darren Waller and he has a drop or two, you're like, hey, you can get this back, right? This isn't you. This is an anomaly, right? Here's your chance to prove it back. I haven't lost faith in you. And Carr just kept going to him, and Waller just kept letting us down.
Like, three times, man. That's rough.
Something was really off. And those are just the three touchdown passes. Like, he had other drops, and he had other like lazy routes and lazy blocking. Like, something was off with Waller. Hopefully it was just like a one day thing. Maybe he had like I don't know. I went to the same spin the bottle party as Josh Jacobs, so they got the same version
same
of mono
or something,
whatever it was. But he just looked lackadaisical. It was weird.
Yeah, and even after the game in the post game presser or the post game interviews, he's just like, you know what? It doesn't matter how many attempts you get, you have to make the play when it's your turn. Mm-hmm. When it's when your number is called, you got to make the play. It's just about concentration and making the play. It's a play that I've made a million times before. I just got to make the play. And it's the truth. You got to go out there and just make it happen. It doesn't matter how many times you get thrown the ball, how many times you're targeted. That doesn't matter. What matters is when you do get targeted, you got to make the play. And unfortunately, at least three, he did it. All right, another ugly. Our red zone offense, we were 2 for 6 on touchdowns in the red zone and 3 sub-35-yard field goals. No bueno. We're going back to the old ways where we were driving down in between the 20s. We're great. Once we get inside the 20, we boggle down. So
two of those were the Waller drops, right?
Well, so Waller drops, yeah.
That's half of it. And then that fucking, like, we finally get a turnover, right? We get an interception, and we just penalize our way out of field goal range. Just
yeah, it's fucking
going
terrible,
backwards.
Dude.
It's like, God damn.
Yeah, so there's the good, there's the bad, and there is the ugly.
So this has been going around Raiders internet for the last day or two. Dan Orlovsky at ESPN has his theory on why Derek Carr, Davante Adams isn't the same, you know, isn't what we hoped it would be after week one, right? Week one, he goes bonkers, right? 17 targets, ton of yards. But he's just not putting up the big numbers that the best receiver in football should. And here's his theory.
Watching this past weekend, it looks like Derek Carr is purposely not looking at Davante Adams. That's what the tape says. There's 5 examples of it and the way I'm going to say it is this. If we just took X's and O's, right? These guys don't have reputation and or resumes. And you had an offensive play call and a defensive play call. The defense is this. And you sit there and say, well, this play that I have, the route concept to my left stinks versus that defense. But I know I've got the route concept to my right is really good versus that defense. I don't care who those people are. It's just a defensive structure, the X's and O's. Well, I'm going to throw the ball to my right. Naturally, because the play to my left stinks. It's the worst possible coverage for that play. 5 times this past weekend, he's looking to the side of the worst possible concept versus the defense, and Devontae is actually in the best possible side, and he won't look there.
So
he's
why?
Not looking there.
Why?
I don't know.
So that's Dan Orlovsky on the Rich Eisen show. That was kind of his main thing that he did throughout the last 2 days, right? Did it on NFL Live, did it on interviews, stuff like that. His big thing is Derek Carr is purposefully avoiding throwing to Davante Adams. Now, you wanted to play this clip, Soto. What do you make of it?
You know, and I see that he did have 10 targets in the game. And this is where stats are misleading, because it's not about the amount of targets that you get, because they could have been like Orlovsky said, it could have been the wrong move or the wrong throw with that route concept to throw it to Davante Adams. So it would have been better to go to somewhere else. It's about the quality of targets that you're giving him, because he only had 5 catches under 40 yards. So it wasn't like he lit the world on fire with those 10 targets. So it's not about the targets that he's getting. It's the ones that he's not getting, on top of the fact that those are the ones that should be the correct throw. I can see maybe feeding him the ball more, even if it's a bad throw, because it is Davante Adams. But you never want to not throw him the ball when your route concept and the defense dictates that he should be your primary target.
So do you buy that what Orlovsky's theory is, that Carr is purposefully avoiding Davante? Because that's his premise.
I saw the video of the plays, and I went back and I watched them on the all 22. And I think that because I think the call is the call, and regardless of defense, but this play is supposed to go to this person here. Mm-hmm. I don't think he's adjusting for the defense, because the play is supposed to go to a different person. And as a quarterback, I feel that you should be able to adjust off the defense, even if, let's say, for example, the head coach is saying, well, we want to go here with this ball. Well, the defense is telling me different, and that's why I should go here. And when that guy that you should go to is Davante Adams, even more so, you should go to him. You shouldn't feed a ball to the wrong area just because that's where it should go, because the defense can maybe dictate that you don't go to that area. And that's what I think he's trying to say. So by purposefully not going to him, I think, yeah, I think he was told to go to a different area with the ball. And he said, okay, well, I'm going to go where I'm being told to throw the ball, regardless of what the defense says.
So this is a coaching issue or a car issue. Because if he's being told, don't read the defense, do this, then that's a McDaniels thing. If he's not making the right read, that's a car thing. Because I think the idea that he's purposely – I think Orlovsky saw those five or so plays and like tried to make this whole premise out of it and this whole theory out of it. He had 10 targets. He had 17 targets in week one. He's not actively avoiding throwing to Davante Adams or Orlovsky. That's absurd.
I agree with that being absurd.
That's absolutely absurd. So that's why I was like, I wonder where Soto's going with this, because you requested this clip. I'm like, does he actually believe Orlovsky here? Because I think it's absolutely absurd. But then that's the schematic question, right? Is Carr being told, all right, we're only 3 weeks into this new system. We're all still learning. Receivers are still learning. You're still learning. Let's keep it simple, right? First read, go. Or this is where we're going pre-snap, right? Mm-hmm. Then that's something that McDaniels has got to work out and figure out to get to Davante. Or if Carr is just missing him, that's very un-Carr. Like, Carr is great pre-snap, right? Even his biggest, even people that his biggest critics can say, like, no, pre-snap, he's good, right?
Yeah.
He can read blitzes. He can see what the coverage is. He said, oh, Devontae's going to be open. I'm going to do hot route. We're going to make that move, right? That Carr's good at that. So something's being lost in translation, because it's one thing for Carr to fumble. It's one thing for Carr to not react to pressure well. Carr making errors pre-snap is not Carr. There's something going on.
Something that is Carr, though, is being a pleaser. And
yeah, he'll do whatever his coach says.
I don't know that Josh McDaniels is telling him, you have to go here and this has to be your number one read. Because he's been around long enough and he's good enough to know, yeah, the defense can change where we go with the ball. Mm-hmm. I just think there's some miscommunication there, because I find it very hard to believe that McDaniels is going to say, this is our predetermined look, we have to go here, when that's not Davante Adams, number one. Number two, we have known, and Carr has admitted himself, he even said, as a Twitter response to Orlovsky, I'm going where I'm being told to throw the ball. Well,
that's what he said in the presser this week,
too. Yeah, yeah. Well, you know what? We don't know exactly what defense they're going to run against us on this specific play. So that can change. And Orlovsky even said in later on in this interview, this is what he teaches high school quarterbacks. They're being taught from that young, this is where you go with this route concept. So it's not like he doesn't know, or he doesn't, like you said, he's really great. He's great pre-snap. He needs to be able to go out there and do what's needed to win, not just what he's being told. This good little soldier business, I don't want to hear it anymore. You got to go out there and you got to do what it takes to win.
You can't have
games.
Your quarterback go rogue, dude. You can't have your quarterback.
It's not about going rogue, RJ. It's the proper read. It's the proper read to
throw. Not if you're being told what the read is. All right, pre-snap, we're doing this.
Without seeing the defense, you're being told that. If the defense dictates otherwise, then you have to go with where the defense says, this is where we should attack this defense.
Then that's a McDaniels call. Then McDaniels
has
to recognize.
That's not necessarily the case, RJ.
Then McDaniels has to recognize that Carr has great pre-snap ability. Let him use it, because it's costing us open routes.
I'm sure he does know that. Look, that's where I say there's the miscommunication, and we don't know. It's easy for me, who isn't the biggest fan of Derek Carr, to say that, yeah, he needs to do X, Y, and Z. And it's easy for you to say, who is a really big Carr supporter, to say, oh, yeah, it's Josh McDaniels. But we don't know. We don't know what's going on in there. But what we do know is there is some miscommunication going on. So,
the silver lining to this is, in McDaniels' presser today, he made it sound like, and again, he's never going to show his hand. It's always cryptic and it's always generalities. Mm-hmm. And I forgot the exact verbiage, but he said something along the lines of, maybe we need to adjust to the defense more. Something like that, right? Like something along the lines of, because he was kind of indirectly responding to Orlovsky. And it was something along the lines of, you know, maybe we should make more reads on the defense instead of predetermining. He kind of alluded to that a little bit. So mm-hmm. I think maybe I think the error here, and I don't think it's an error. I think it's a standard byproduct of a brand new system, brand new wide receiver. You don't have Hunter. Waller's not playing well. All right, let's keep this simple, right? Let's keep it real simple. This is what we're going to do, right? And I'm not saying that's a bad strategy, because like you can keep mistakes down, right? Keep things less complicated. You're not holding the ball as long with this terrible offensive line that actually decent run blocking this week, but still pass blocking has been terrible. That's not a bad strategy, right? Let's go quick, right? This is your read, go, right? Don't have to hold the ball a long time, bunch of new people. The idea of let's keep it very simple, one read, go, not bad, but this is the bad byproduct of that. Remember, Carr didn't have any real turnovers. That's probably due to just simplifying things down, right? Don't sit there in the pocket for 5 seconds and make all these reads and try to be a hero. Bam, bam, snap, go, right? No yeah. fumbles and one well, interception on his fault.
What I have to say to that is Orlovsky made it seem like that is simple football. That pre-snap read, what Derek Carr is good at, that is simple. It's a quick thing. Okay, this is the defense off where we're running. I have to go here. So look, here's the thing, and here's my take on Carr and how he's played so far this year. And like we said before, I think you and I, RJ, as much as we disagree, I think we've said this before. We agree, 85-90% on Carr? Mostly. I think the difference that you and I have is just a matter of perspective, basically, is how those positives and or strengths and weaknesses, how they play off of each other. That's where we differ, because I think we're pretty in line with what his strengths are and what his weaknesses are. And what I'm taking a look at is if picking a quarterback for your team was all about physical tools, it would be very easy, right? You're like, okay, this guy's this big. He throws the ball this hard. He can throw it this far. You wouldn't need to even have him see him throw him against receivers, right? Just strap one of those targets on those cool, remember the targets that were on the freaking golf carts, and you just drive it around, and however many points he scores, the guy who scores the best, that's going to be the best quarterback. I mean, it was all about physical tools, but it's not. And I think it comes into play mostly when we're talking about Carr in like training camp and in joint practices. Carr is not just good, because any quarterback can be good during those circumstances. Carr is like shredding defenses. Carr is like a Hall of Fame level player during those circumstances. Well, when the game comes on and during the season, Carr's a fringe top 10-ish, 11 to 14-ish, 15 quarterback, depending on who you ask and what he's done the last game. Mm-hmm. So how anyone can be that Hall of Famer with the tools that you have when you have a red jersey on. When you take the red jersey off, to fall from really, really, really good, one of the top in the league, because the Rams said it, New England said it, everyone said it on the joint practices, which is probably the closest you're going to get to game action. But with the red jersey on, he was killing it. When the red jersey comes on, he's a middle of the pack guy. So that's where the perspective comes into play. Like his weaknesses, how much do those bring down his strengths, and how does that balance it out? And ultimately, look, when we look at Derek Carr and his abilities, right? Walter Football, I talked to you guys about this, I think, 2 weeks ago. Walter Football coming out of college, okay? These are the things that Walter Football said about Derek Carr, the negatives, okay? And I think we'll be able to kind of see these flip over into his play. They said he had smaller hands. Well, we all know that Derek Carr has fumbling issues. So that kind of, okay, it makes sense, right? That's a scouting thing that makes sense. It says he can get flustered by a pass rush. Okay. We saw the whole first week thing with Joey Bosa, what he said last week, and how Carr got flustered. And you can see him physically either throwing the ball poorly or not moving around very well in the pocket, and having his pocket presence was compromised, let's just say. All right. Lacks mobility, not a running threat. Well, we've seen when he does tuck the ball and run, he can be effective, maybe not, you know, ripping off huge gains, but maybe that was a little bit unfair. He came from a spread offense, only reads a third of the field. That, I think, is what we're seeing come into play more often post-snap. Carr is really good knowing where to go to the ball pre-snap. It's the post-snap where it comes into issue. We've seen him lock on receivers quite a bit. We've seen him say, go from primary to check down, primary to check down, not really going through a progression. And that's one of the knocks on Carr, that more often than not, that's what his deal is his primary target or a check down. And we talked about the anxiety issues another time before. How does that come into play? Who knows? What I do know is the last time the Raiders were big favorites at home, they lost both games. How does that come into play? I don't know. Could it be? It could. Maybe. Maybe not. But these are the things that were said about Derek Carr coming out of college. And we've seen some of these things kind of manifest themselves in his pro game.
The last thing I'll say on this, and this is reflecting more on week three. And is it a McDaniels issue? Is Carr being a good soldier? Is he making the wrong read? What's miscommunication? The reason I think that McDaniels has made the decision to say, let's keep it very simple because we're week three, new system, new guys, etc., is because when Carr is free to do his own thing, 2-minute drill, just go, he plays his best and he's effective, right? Mm-hmm. I think that's why I think that McDaniels is saying, okay, let's get these turnovers under control by simplifying and speeding everything up. Mm-hmm. So we have time to protect you. You don't have to like sit there in the pocket behind this terrible O-line and get beat up and get flustered and fumble and make throw picks. Let's be quick, read, go. That's why I think that's what the case is right this second. Mm-hmm. Is because when the gloves come off, Carr plays great. Or really well.
Much, much better, yeah. I agree with that, but you also have to take a look at, too, is the defenses are different, too. The defense is a lot more like the defenses that we played in the first half. A lot more keep everything in front of you, don't get beat deep. And that's where Carr can shine in that type of environment.
That's what I'm saying.
He can, right? He can.
So that's what's most effective. So we'll see if, because now it's that balance, right? Do you play lights out and let Carr be free and give up a fumble and two picks every game, or do you tighten him up, miss Devontae, but you're not turning the ball over? It's like,
well, the thing
that's
is
that
too,
balance
is,
you do with Carr because he is a turnover machine.
If you have to lay off the freaking throttle because you're afraid your guy's going to turn over, that's a problem. Because look, the NFL, it's built for quarterbacks to succeed. The way the rules are going, the way the game is going, it's built for quarterbacks to succeed. So there was a stat that came out. It's been 25 games since Carr has thrown 3 touchdowns in a game. It's like, I think the last time he did it was October 11th of 2020 against the Chiefs, last time we beat him. Okay.
Should have had 4 on Sunday.
Should have, but he did it, unfortunately. But here's the deal. We talk about, okay, it's a bad environment for him. Bad coaching, a lot of different coaches, a lot of this, a lot of that, weapons, defense, this and that. Well, how do you explain the Jets in half a season have had 3 backup quarterbacks throw 3 or more touchdowns in the game? Joe Flacco did it in week 2.
Because it's a random stat. Like 3 touchdowns can happen.
No, it's not a random stat when you haven't
very
done it
random.
Almost. Wait, hang on a second. These are stats. You're a stat guy. He hasn't done this in over almost 2 years. He hasn't thrown touchdowns. So these are poor decisions made, and Orlovsky pulled it up. He said these are – and I showed you a clip of the Arizona game. I don't know if you saw it or not. I did kind of make a shitty comment to you when I sent it, but those were also missed opportunities by Derek Carr where we could have maybe moved the ball a little bit more. Okay. So look, Flacco threw 4 touchdowns in week 2. Mike White taking over for Zach Wilson threw 3 touchdowns. Mike White throws a touchdown in the first quarter, and Josh freaking Johnson, who played for 3 NFL teams last year, threw for 3 touchdowns in 3 quarters.
That's my point. It can happen to anybody. It's a random stat.
But
it's indicative of quarterback.
No,
like, it's not really
it is. It is when you don't do it. Having a random quarterback do it, that's random. But when a quarterback doesn't do it and he plays and he starts all 25 of those games, that's a problem, RJ. That's a big problem. Then I think that the worst thing to happen to the objectivity of Raider fans as it goes to Derek Carr is Matthew Stafford getting traded to the Rams and him winning a Super Bowl. I think that's the worst thing that happened to the objectivity when it comes to Derek Carr, because that was a quarterback that was compared to Derek Carr a lot. oh, they're a good quarterback and it's been a bad situation, and just get them in a better situation and they'll be better and they'll be able to win. And Stafford moved from a bad situation to the Rams, which was a good situation, and he won a Super Bowl. But guess what? The comparison wasn't a player comparison. It was a situational comparison, because when it comes to Derek Carr and Matthew Stafford, Matthew Stafford is and will always be a better quarterback, much better quarterback than Derek Carr. He was the number one quarterback coming out of high school, number one quarterback coming out of college. And I even made a stat. I looked at a stat and I was, okay, we talked about Derek Carr and his bad defenses. So let's take a look at Derek Carr's 8 seasons and the defenses that made the playoffs that year. How many points did they allow a game? The average of all those teams in all those seasons was 23 points per game. When a Matthew Stafford defense gave up 23 points or less, when you multiply that percentage out for 16 games, at the time it was 16 games, he has 11.5 wins, whereas Derek Carr was like just over 8.4, I think it was. So even when his defense performed well.
So your two knocks on Carr are the 3 touchdown random stat and one you made up.
That is no, it's okay. That's what it is. RJ, I'm not trying to make this personal, man. It's not personal for me. This is what the stats tell us.
What happens with Carr, and you are driving this bus, is that he's been on shit teams and he takes all the blame. That's what it is.
It's not. That's not what
that's
it is,
what
RJ.
It is. You're he's on shit teams and he takes the blame.
You're trying to make this personal, RJ, against me, that I'm driving the bus against, and I'm not. I'm giving you numbers. Arlovsky is showing you footage of tape of him not making the proper reads. I'm showing you numbers, and I'll tell you this. Here's the million-dollar question.
I've seen shitloads of tape of Aaron Rodgers missing Devontae Adams last season, too.
The million-dollar
question, wide open Devontae Adams that he misses. Like, it's not just Carr.
Is Carr talented enough and consistent enough to be the solution for your team? Because here's the problem. Here's the problem in the NFL. The problem in the NFL is the salary cap. Okay, that's the problem. The problem is the salary cap in the NFL, because that gives you an incomplete, imperfect team because of the salary cap, because you have to spend money in different areas. Sometimes guys don't pan out and you have to deal with the money or whatever. You could only spend so much.
Thank God it exists. Otherwise it'd be the Rams, the Cowboys, and now the Broncos with everybody.
Yeah, just having all the money. But that is the problem. And the solution, if your quarterback is good enough, he's your solution. He covers all that stink. And we've seen teams that had quarterbacks that were more accomplished than Derek Carr teams have moved on from him because they've seen that this is not the guy. So look, it's really easy to say, okay, the first game he threw three interceptions. Yeah, that's on Carr, whatever. Okay, let's move on. But the second game, it's very easy to say, you know what, Hunter Renfrow, he fumbled twice, and that's why we lost the game. But no one wants to take a look at the fact that Carr threw for sub 50% completion percentage in the second half for 42 yards, when he could have, because I send you that tape of improper reads that he made again, where he could have moved the ball and he didn't. So he put his team in that situation to be in overtime by his play in the second half. It's easy to say,
and he's also driven the ball and had receivers, tight ends drop the ball in the end zone. Like it's gone both ways. Like he's put the team in positions to win before.
Yes. Okay. No. So where do you put the position in the second half? How do you put the position for the team to win against the Cardinals? He put that team in a position to lose that game. He didn't put that team in a position to win that game against the Titans.
He scored 20 points in the first half. He did a lot to put that team in position.
But the game is two halves, RJ. And what we're looking at here is Arlovsky showed you with the Titans. Yeah, he had drop passes. And I put those on Darren Waller. He dropped those touchdown passes. But you also saw where there was plays that should have been made that weren't being made. So you have to take a look at every. You can't just take a look at stats. You have to take a look at the stats and the gameplay. And I'm telling you right now, I don't know that he is consistent enough to be the solution, because he's shown us that he hasn't been.
The team let Carr down on Sunday, not the other way around. He outplayed his line. He outplayed his tight end. The team let him down this time on Sunday, and that's undeniable. Not the same every. Not the every game.
I'm not saying that. I'm not going to agree that I'm not going to agree to that. That's undeniable.
It's undeniable. The biggest thing.
Well, how can you deny everything else I've said? That they have all been facts.
But they're like weird, innocuous ones. Like you just got the boner.
How
is
that?
Three touchdown games is like this super important stat to you. It's not big.
It is an important stat when you're not scoring enough points to win, RJ. When you're kicking field goals and your red zone percentage is terrible, that is a good stat to look at. When it hasn't been done in almost 2 years, when the game is set up for quarterbacks to be successful,
even you know the red zone issues was a Gruden issue because Carr was okay, great red
now,
zone
but,
before.
And now it's drops is the issue, and the other time it's McDaniels is the issue. Well, guess what, RJ? He's had six coaches, all these different things, and I'm not trying to make this personal, but you're trying to goad me and you're trying to get my goat. To try to come at you, I'm not going to come at you personally. I came at you with facts. I came at you with stats.
I
came at you. No, you're coming with
Carr's been great in the red zone with every coach but Gruden. Correct. That is a factual
I would
stat.
Not. Okay. Where state your sources and tell me how.
We've been over this.
No,
the Raiders' red zone percentage pre Gruden, Carr's time, we're good.
That's not correct. I'm telling you right now. From what I've seen, because look, it's easy to have a bad defense when you have a lot of three and outs. It's easy to have a bad defense. It's easy to have a lot of comeback victories when you didn't put away games sooner than you should have. When you should have put away games earlier in the game and you didn't. That's when it's easy to have a lot of comeback wins. And that's one of the things that a lot of Carr fans and Carr backers want to hang on to. But the fact is, he also creates those opportunities for himself. You should not lose games if you're a legit starting quarterback in this league. If you're one of the guys who can take your team and a guy that you can bank on, you should not lose games because of your play. In 2 weeks, we've lost games because I'm not going to even talk about the Titans game. Let's just put that to the side.
Every quarterback loses games for his team sometimes. The very, very best quarterbacks do it too. You're putting a weird standard on Carr.
It's not a weird standard, RJ. It's not a weird standard. He's a 500 quarterback, man. He's a 500 quarterback. He's been a 500 quarterback. He's not the answer. We've seen it so many different coaches, so many different schemes, so many different weapons. The same issues he had in college, he has in the pros.
Never had a good defense. New scheme every fucking 45 minutes. These are facts.
RJ,
they're facts and stats, but with me, they're excuses.
Okay, but you're doing it the other way around too, RJ. You're trying to make it seem like I'm unreasonable. But when I give you, those are innocuous stats. Those are a made up stat.
You've brought the three touchdown thing 20 times this week. Like you sending me messages constantly. Three touchdowns. Okay.
He doesn't throw enough touchdowns, RJ. For a team that passes enough to get almost 5,000 yards to not have one game, do you pass that much? You throw 44 times in a game. You throw that much. You're that pass heavy, and you don't throw three times. There's an issue there, RJ, especially when the rules are set up for quarterbacks to succeed. And then you say that my stat is made up. I did just because you haven't looked at it and you haven't seen it because this is a stat about Derek Carr. And I said, you know what? What's the average defense? How many points do they give up to go to the playoffs? And it's 23 points. That's not a made-up stat, RJ. That is hard facts. And when he gets a team that was good enough to make the playoffs, when he gets a defensive effort that good, he's a 500 quarterback. That's who he is.
His best defense was 20th. His best defense was 20th.
Even when his defense does perform, RJ, he's 50-50.
He's never had a good deal. Look, we've been through
RJ,
all
I'm
the
telling
things
you
that,
about this.
Been through
I understand.
All the things about
over
Carr.
One season. Over and I over get again. It. I get it. Yeah, because you refuse to look at the data. Even when his defense does not give up or gives up a playoff caliber effort, 23 points per or less, he still wins only half the time.
And when his defense plays like absolute trash, like the vast majority of his career, he's won games for him. That they had no business winning.
He's under 500, so he lost well under half. But the thing is how does that make us any more comfortable with him, knowing that he's lost when his defense has played bad? Of course, quarterbacks are going to lose when they play poorly. But how do they do when the defense actually gives you a chance to win? And he's 50-50.
We'll have a car debate continue as the season goes on. I'm mostly interested in what McDaniels decides to do moving forward. Is it let Carr make the reads and live and die by Carr? Or are we sticking with what we saw on Sunday and it's we make the decision pre-snap and we stick to it to keep it simple? We'll see what he does moving forward.
Ultimately, that trust has to be earned. And I don't think he did himself any favors that first week.
He should have done he did himself a ton of favors week three. So we'll see if McDaniels changes because he played fantastic week three. So let's talk about McDaniels because
use these words, RJ, like fantastic. He was not very good, RJ.
Played awesome.
He threw the ball 44 times. That's why he got 300
and he
yards.
He should have had four touchdowns. And he shouldn't have had any interceptions. And he didn't fumble. And he led the team fourth quarter to within a fucking pube of winning a game that they should never even – they weren't even in. But his heroics kept them in it.
And why were they in that game, RJ? Because the defense blanked the opposite
team. Defense gave 24 points.
See, look, so in the fourth quarter, you want to give Carr all the credit, but you don't want to give any credit to the defense who blanked them in the second half.
No, because they put the team in a hole and just got that hole a little bit more full. They didn't get them out of a hole. They dug a hole. And it's like, all right, we're not going to keep digging it deeper and deeper. Let's get to McDaniels because
of course you want to get to McDaniels because that's the guy that you blame.
We just did 30 minutes on your car rant. We're already an hour on the podcast.
See, these are the type of words, RJ, that you like to use. Like, he played a phenomenal game. He played a fabulous game when it wasn't a phenomenal game. It wasn't a fabulous game. And you call what I said a rant? How was that a rant? Around. You're very condescending, RJ. I'll tell you that right now. Because
this was your topic.
It was
your clip that you wanted to play.
And
we did 30 minutes on it.
Exactly. And how was that a rant? Am I going throwing shit, running around? No, I'm giving. I was very calm the entire time.
Rants aren't bad. Rants and radio are awesome.
The thing is, RJ, it's the way you use it, man. It's the you're using it to dismiss me, to dismiss my opinion.
I'm dismissing you, Soto, you would know it.
Stop it, RJ. Now you're dismissing me again.
You're right. See, now you know it. That was a dismiss.
Oh, RJ.
We did 30 minutes on the thing you want to do with
what Carr. Does it matter how fucking long we fucking talked about it, RJ?
Because we're an hour into a one-hour podcast. We have three more things to get to.
You like to just put your little spin at the end to discredit a lot of the shit that I said. Just because you don't agree with
it. I was transitioning to Josh McDaniels because we have a Josh McDaniels topic. We still have to do Raiders, Broncos, and what up, Winbacks? And we've been doing an hour. Do you want to just keep doing this or can we keep going? What would you like to do, Soto? What would you like to do?
I would like to have a podcast where you're not trying to just discount what I'm saying by saying stuff like rant and all those other things. Every time I try to say something.
It's a good thing in radio, Soto.
You might feel that way because you're in the business. The people listening aren't. And it's a big difference.
I think they enjoyed your rant. I did.
I mean, yeah, you enjoyed it because you wanted to poke holes at it.
So what would you like to do next?
I mean, we can move on. I'm saying it's like this. It's not fair that I understand. Like, and other things too. Like, dude, you've said that Derek Carr had an amazing game against the Cardinals. What?
I didn't say that.
Yes, you did. Against the Cardinals. You put
an amazing half. An amazing half.
Okay, look, I changed it. I changed it on the YouTube description. I changed it because it said Carr had an amazing game when he just had a okay game because you put the both halves together and it was just an okay game. Under 250 yards, two touchdowns, under what was it like?
If you want to peel back the curtain, the description and stuff like that is just for SEO stuff. Like what we say on here is what we're doing.
No,
the description shit's just SEO stuff.
No, because it doesn't need to be amazing game because that's. I understand where we're going with this, but nah, man. It's like little things like that, dude, really freaking bug me because I'm not polished like you, bro. I haven't been doing this for a long time. And I feel like when I put something out there that's valid, that people who know more than football than both of us put together, like Dan Orlovsky, put something out, you just poo-poo it because it doesn't fit your narrative. And I'm like,
poo-poo it. We did 30 minutes on it, and you agreed with me that his theory was bunk.
I didn't say that. What are you talking about?
Yes, that Derek Carr is, his theory was Derek Carr is actively trying to avoid throwing to Devontae Adams. That was his basis. That's what he said. That was the headline, right?
Okay, that's
and
the
we
headline.
Both agreed that was wrong, right?
Okay, what I'm saying is this. What I'm saying is there is the like you said, the SEO click. That's the SEO click shit. What he's really showing is balls that should have gone Devontae Adams' way, whether his name is Devontae Adams or not. They should have gone there, but it just so happens to be Devontae Adams, and they aren't going there. And there's a reason for that. And he put that on Derek Carr because he says, I coach my quarterbacks in high school to be able to make these reads. That's what I'm saying.
And we both agree that it's probably a miscommunication issue, right? Now, I think it's a little bit more McDaniels saying, all right, Carr's a turnover machine. Let's simplify and quicken it, right? That's my theory on why. But we both agreed on most of that thing.
But
we
why
both agreed
that
his premise was wrong, and we both agree that miscommunication is the primary culprit. We sort of disagree on how that materializes, which is why, like, I don't feel like you listen to my words. I think you remember how you feel when I say them, and there's
no,
a big difference.
I don't know. I do listen because I respond to you, RJ, because we're having a back and forth when you say stuff. I'm not like clueless and saying some things that are off the wall. I mean, I'm in the conversation with you. I just feel like nothing's ever going to be enough for you to say, okay, he's not the guy. Short of him playing like he did week one, it has to be obviously over the top. No one else to blame. No one else to look around. It's him.
And I think there's nothing he can do good that's making you say, let's not get rid of him. Let's use him. And also, and here's the other like major part of this conversation that we rarely ever go to. Like, let's say you're right. Let's say he's not the guy. Now what?
Like, we move on. Get,
how? Who? Who are we? Are we gonna cut? Are we gonna trade him to get what we can? Start completely over?
Yeah.
So you want to start completely over at quarterback and just
RJ? If you know for a fact that the guy you have is not the guy, you have to move on.
How?
KC won 12, 13 games a year.
I'm not asking. We've agreed. You have to move on. My question is how. Because that's something
how
a GM
every
has to
team
think.
How every team moves on. You draft.
Every team moves on different. Every team moves on different. Some guys they trade for a veteran.
So why are you asking that question? You know how you move on. You either make a trade and you sign somebody, or you draft somebody.
Okay.
Because that guy is not the guy.
But this is my point. As a GM, you can't just say, "Okay, we're going to move on." As a GM, you say, "We're going to move on this way. We have to move on with a plan. Either." We see this quarterback's contract's up. We're going to make a move. We see someone coming up in the draft we want to grab. We think this guy's super undervalued. Like, there needs to be a plan
in
place.
One of the above. Grab one of the above.
But you can't take moving on from a quarterback so dismissively. Fuck it. We'll figure it out.
I'm not dismissing it, RJ, because you put the work in to get to that solution. To get to that answer. The answer is the guy we have is not the guy. So why are we going to keep banging our heads against the wall when we know?
We've already moved on from that. In our hypothetical, we've already agreed.
Why are we arguing how? Because you know how.
Because you
we
know.
We sign somebody or we draft somebody. That's how teams move on.
If you're a GM, you don't say somebody. You say this guy. I want that guy. Or I think this guy's up.
The Raiders scouted the Florida quarterback. The Raiders were at that game. They were one of the three NFL teams that were at his game. There are scouting guys, RJ. They are always scouting guys. There's always a plan to move on. What I'm saying is when you identify that your guy is not the guy, that's when the plan goes into action. Because you're always scouting. You're always looking.
If you had a plan to move on from Carr, I would love to hear it. Say, hey, we can get a better quarterback than Carr, and I have a plan that'll work. I swear to God, Soto, I'd be like, let's hear it. Because I've said it every time. I'm here to replace and improve every single position. Mm-hmm. Every single position on the Raiders roster is up for grabs if we can get somebody better, minus Devontae, Max, and Carlson.
And Carlson, yeah.
We have 50 sure. players.
And maybe fucking what's his name? Fucking punter. God damn it. What's his name? He punts a lot. I mean, shit. The fuck's his name? Cole, yes. Cole. Yeah, that's another guy that you can't really get better at.
And I stand by that. That's not a slogan. That's not like a hypothetical.
You're expecting that to happen day one. So if we draft a guy, RJ,
a plan needs to start day one, right? The plan needs to be in action day one. And if you have that plan, I'm more than I would love to hear it. Like if you're like, hey, this is how we move on from Derek Carr. This is how we're going to get a better quarterback than Derek Carr.
We've targeted these three players in the draft that we want to get. And we feel that those players have a higher ceiling than Derek Carr. Because Derek Carr, I'm not saying this is truth or not. I'm saying as the GM, we've seen Derek Carr's ceiling, and it's not enough to get us where we want to be. He's not a big enough of an eraser to erase the problem that is the salary cap. But these guys that we've identified, these guys, we feel that they can be the guy. So we can go ahead and target one of these guys in the draft and build from there.
So that's the basis of this of the issue. Because, one, I think we can win with him. We have won with him. He's a three-time Pro Bowler, throws for a million yards. We know what he's good at. We know what he's not good at. We can work around it. We disagree on that, but that's
where I'm starting at. We've been to the playoffs twice in 8 years.
Yeah, with literally the worst defense
in
the last decade.
When half
ESPN
the
ESPN ranked the Raiders 2010 to 2020 defense the worst defense of the decade.
But you can agree that there are things like in the second half of the Cardinals game, there are things that you can do to hurt your defense offensively, and there are things that you can do to help your defense offensively. So it's not just about his defense being bad. What if they're being put in bad positions, RJ, if you want to play the what if game?
What if the defense is putting the offense in bad positions? Because there's way more data and evidence that the defense has been dragging the team down the last decade than Carr. It's insurmountable. Like, it's ridiculously bad how bad our defenses were. The Gunther years
when you take a sheet off, that's not a true representation of what a quarterback is. Does he have a strong arm? Yes. Can he move around in the pocket? Yes. Can he throw the ball accurately? Yes. But there's degrees to it, RJ. And those degrees are the degrees that at how big is your eraser now? How accurate are you? How consistent are you with that accuracy? You have a strong arm, but how strong is that arm? Those are the things that make somebody a better prospect with a higher ceiling than someone who just ticks boxes. And I think Carr does a really good job at ticking a lot of boxes. But I don't think that his ceiling is super high where he's going to be that huge eraser who can take care of a lot of problems. And every team has those problems, and that problem is a salary cap. You can't spend for the best of everybody.
You have to weigh so many things, right? You're like, all right, maybe we think these two or three quarterbacks can be better than Carr. Maybe they will, maybe they won't. What are the odds, right? What's being in quarterback purgatory worth? Because that's essentially what we're risking, right? If we're wrong, then we're in quarterback purgatory and we're fucked, right?
Yeah, and
That's what we're gambling against, right? And that's a big gamble. And I'm not willing to make that gamble when we have a three-time Pro Bowler.
Gamble. We can't look at Pro Bowlers anymore as a measure of somebody who's really good.
Whatever measurement you want to make. A guy who threw 4,000 yards 3 years in a row. Whatever, like pick an accolade, right? Pick your favorite accolade of Derek Carr.
I'm you know me with Pro Bowlers, dude. Like fucking nine fucking quarterbacks make the Pro Bowl. Okay, so it's like in every conference because I don't want to play, I can't play. So they're a Pro Bowler technically, but then the next guy's a Pro Bowler too. Like fucking Mac Jones is a goddamn Pro Bowler, dude. What the fuck?
Whatever metric you want to pick.
Yeah, yeah. But what I'm saying is, it is, but also. It's worth it to chance going into that purgatory if you're convinced that your guy is not the guy, if your guy doesn't have the ceiling.
I almost don't want to open up this can of worms, but like this whole like the guy, not the guy. It's not a black and white thing. Guys can be the guy one season and not the guy the next season, and then the guy the next season, depending on the circumstances.
Like, well, there's the inconsistency that you're looking at, and you're taking a look at a lot of different things, RJ. So when you're saying, okay, this guy is not the guy, where's his ceiling, and his inconsistency can go into that. Yeah, he has really good peaks, but his valleys are also really big too.
100%. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying is once you're convinced, hey, this is not the guy that can take us to where we want to go, we need to pivot to a different direction. And these are some guys that we've identified. That's when you go. You don't just keep rolling out the same guy, hoping that you can get 52 right instead of getting one right.
Well, that's the thing is I'm not convinced he's not the guy or whatever. And again, I hate that theory. Like you're getting the best guy possible at the position. That's how you have to look at it. Have to get the best guy you can possibly get at the position. for every position, not just quarterback, every for coach, offensive coordinator, cornerback, long snapper. You're trying to get the best at everything you can possible.
Okay, instead of the guy, we can say talented and consistent enough. He has to be talented and consistent.
The best guy you can get. That's how I look at it. Because that's the reality, right? Who's the best guy we can get at every position you need in every part of the organization, from secretary to quarterback, right? Like, that's the goal, right? Let's get the best of everything, obviously, with our salary cap, right? I think that's more how you have to look at it. Mm-hmm. If we can get someone better than Carr, again, for the millionth time, I'm in.
Like, well, the thing is, RJ, you're wanting that sure thing, and there is no sure thing. The only sure thing that you know is that you're not comfortable with the guy you have being able to get it done.
So I'm comfortable with the guy we have.
Okay, I
can do it better. There's guys that can do it better. But there's a lot of guys that can do way worse and set us back a long time.
Okay, look at this, for example. Josh Rosen was picked 10th by Arizona. And the next year, they picked Kyler Murray. Was Josh Rosen a young quarterback who was feeling through, he didn't have a very good team around him, who was feeling his oats and trying to make his way in the NFL? Yeah, but they identified, dude, we gave up some big capital for this guy, a top 10 pick. But you know what? He doesn't got it. We identified it early that this guy is not the guy. Once you identify, then you pivot. Now, was Kyler Murray a sure thing? No, he wasn't a sure thing. We've seen number one picks bomb before too. But they identified that this was not in the inverse. Daniel Jones.
Kyler Murray wasn't a sure thing, but he was a no-brainer. If you have the number one pick and Kyler Murray's there, you make that move because it's like the value of that guy at that position, it's like too valuable. And also, Rosen, like, it was proven he was a fuck up, right? Like, lazy, didn't, you know what I mean? Like, partied, like, that's other parts of it too. So it's
look at the Giants. The Giants stuck with Daniel Jones instead of getting Justin Herbert. Justin Herbert was right there for him. They could have had him the following year, but they didn't.
If we had the number one pick and there was another Joe Burrow or someone there, like, hell yeah, let's do it.
But the thing is, we don't know these guys are going to be Joe Burrow, dude. You have to take the chance if it's there.
And it hasn't been there for the Raiders, is my point. Like, what
they
amazing
haven't tried,
quarterbacks
RJ.
Have been available?
There have been quarterbacks available to draft that they haven't gotten. Because for whatever reason, they don't want to draft another quarterback.
I've said before, I'm down to draft a quarterback.
But if you draft a quarterback, RJ, you have to spend some legit capital on a guy. You can't just spend a freaking fourth rounder on a guy. You got to spend some legit capital on a dude.
You keep saying dudes and doing it like...
Yeah, on a quarterback.
I need specifics. Like,
you need to spend... When I say dude, we're talking about quarterback position. So it's obviously a guy. So I called him a dude.
But which quarterback did we miss on? That like we should... like, you know what I'm saying? Like there's...
Jalen Hurts was available. We could have got him. Who was available?
Were you knocking on the door to get Jalen Hurts? I wasn't. I didn't think he was going to be anything special. I was wrong, but...
Again, I don't remember. The thing is, if you're not even in the market to look for someone, you're not going to find them.
That's just bad GMing if you're not trying to improve every position on your team at all times.
But the
and
thing
I don't
is,
and I don't think RG. Well, who knows? The Gruden Mayock.
The Chargers aren't spending a first or second round pick on a quarterback anytime soon. They're just not because they're not in the market for one. Okay. Same thing with Kansas City's not spending a first or second round pick on a quarterback anytime soon. Hell, the Broncos aren't either. It's like they're set at quarterback. I don't even have to worry about spending this type of capital on a quarterback. So when you're set on that guy being your guy, then you're not going to use that kind of capital. There have been guys available that we could have had. But the thing is, you have to identify that your guy is not going to be the one to be able to get it done for you. And that's what I'm saying. You're saying that there hasn't been anyone available. There has been. But
there hasn't been anyone who's been worth the chance of quarterback purgatory. We know this guy's going to be better than Derek. And sure enough, we're willing to do risk quarterback purgatory. And again, I still think Derek Carr can win us a Super Bowl. I still think that.
I don't.
I know you don't.
I don't.
Let's do what up windbags. We still have a great Josh McDaniels conversation that we need to do. We still got to preview Sunday's game. But we're up against it. So let's do what up windbags, and we'll do some special YouTube stuff through the week.
Steven Richardson, wasn't he a running back for us?
Steven Richardson? I don't know. Steven Richardson?
No, something with a T. Trent Richardson.
Yeah.
I've been hitting the head a lot, but I got something in there.
What up, Winbags? Stevie Richardson. There has been one thing consistent in all three losses, us not running the ball. Someone text McDaniels that if you run, the wins will come. I mean, it's not that simple, but that is true. What's the one consistent thing that's been with these three losses? We haven't really ran the ball a lot. And we knew going in it was going to be a passing team, right? That's where our assets are. That's where our money is. That's what McDaniels does. But the way things are shaping out, specifically with our O-line, that's atrocious at pass blocking. Not I'm not going to say good at run blocking, but better. They're a better run blocking unit than a pass blocking unit. Josh Jacobs is playing well. Hell, we've got six running backs on the roster.
It's all about starting better, man.
Because Ivan things up.
Weeks 1 and 3, we got behind, and we just couldn't run the ball because you can't. It's not all about getting chunk plays when you pass the ball a lot. It's about moving the ball down the field and not taking up enough time. Not taking up a bunch of time because you only get so many possessions, and if you're already behind, keep running the ball over and over again.
The last two games weren't that bad. The Titans scored three straight touchdowns. We went touchdown, field goal. Like we were behind, but we weren't behind insurmountable numbers. We weren't behind a point where you deviate from your offense, right? You're not in a we were never in desperation mode. We're only down two touchdowns at half. Like you still play your offense with a whole half ready to play. Like not until late in the fourth quarter, or is it like, all right, take the reins off, let's go. So I'm not buying that as an excuse for McDaniels.
Here's the problem though. When you have Derrick Henry on the opposite side who can eat up the clock, that's a problem. When they had an 8 minute freaking or 7 minute drive, yeah, you do have to throw the ball because you're like, fuck, even though we're not behind a lot, these guys can eat up a ton of clock and be really effective at it. We have to score quickly.
Greg Z123. Anyone else wishing Rich Bisaccia was still there now? I am.
That's just silly. You're gonna want to give Derek Carr 9 years at quarterback, but you don't want to give Josh McDaniels 3 games. That's just silly.
So this is where I am with McDaniels. Like, clearly we're not moving on from McDaniels anytime soon. Like 3 games. Let him try, right? Let him get things rolling, right? But I do understand, like, we had something special. We had a formula that can win last season, and we blew it up. Time will tell if that was the right call or not, but I think it's fair that that's going to be a question moving forward, right? Like if McDaniels crashes and burns like he did in Denver.
I don't think it's fair.
If he crashes and burns, then you're gonna say keeping Rich Bisaccia after that incredible run last season
it was an incredible run, but like I said at the end of the year last year, that team was that specific team. Those 4 games that we won in a row to end the season, even statistically, we shouldn't have won those games. For however reason we did, you cannot sustain success having a sub 50% win probability by your play. We had a quarterback that was turning the ball over just as much as he was throwing touchdowns. We had a defense that was okay, but not getting turnovers themselves. We were basically winning off of grit and the leg of Daniel Carlson. And unfortunately, if you're a fighter and you have a lot of grit and that's what you really base it off of, you're going to have a short career.
Inadvertently made the case to keep Rich Bisaccia.
No, because RJ.
Because we were less talented than every RJ. Team we played, no, and
so
we
you
won.
Pull this out again, RJ, and it's not true. You cannot sustain success that way. You cannot sustain success getting lucky. We got lucky on a lot of those games at the end of the season. You cannot sustain success that way.
It's very intangible, right? What happened last
season. It's very improbable is what it is.
It's very intangible, but what's the thing that affects intangibles the most? It's coaching. Like that's my point. Like you've completely dismissed the idea that Rich Bisaccia was a big part of that success. And I'm not saying he was or isn't. I'm saying he was the coach for an improbable run. Josh McDaniels is the coach for a trash run. Very, very early, right? We're talking a handful of games last season and only 3 games this season, right? This is not a scientific study, right? It's going to take McDaniels needs at least. We can't even after the full season, I'm not going to say McDaniels is a success or failure. He needs more time than that. But also, little piece of evidence we have right this second, something good happened last season. It could have been Bisaccia. Something bad is happening this season. It could be McDaniels. Time will tell. And it's worth keeping that in the back of your mind as this season and next season unfolds.
Well, another thing that's going to be really telling, too, is if after this season, Bisaccia gets a shot at a job. Because if he doesn't, after what you said he did, why wouldn't anyone else? I mean, I understand someone not giving a job because a lot of the jobs were already taken up. But if he doesn't get a job after this season, that goes to show you that maybe he just wasn't the right coach.
I'm curious how many interviews he gets, right?
Yeah, that's something I want to keep track of.
I'm curious on the number of interviews. If someone's going to like kind of kick the tires on Bisaccia. But again, I refuse to let you just completely dismiss that Bisaccia could have been the spark. Like it could have been. I don't know. I don't know for sure. You don't know for sure. He could have been. Richard Kidd. We need to beat Denver and Kansas City. We'll be right going into the bye, then three games to lower teams in a row. Let's say we beat Denver and Kansas City. Mm-hmm. How you feeling?
Good.
Right, like right back to like we got
two and one in our division.
Yeah.
You know, we got some very winnable games. More important than the result is how, especially in the first kind of quarter of the season, is how we looked. Are we looking better? Are we trending better? How are we trending? And if we win and we win by some fluke shit like fucking Arizona, how they beat us on a fumble and returned it when we were in fucking field goal range, like shit like that, that is not going to give me a lot of confidence. You know what I'm saying? If we win, like, okay, that was a strong game. Like Denver, we blew them out the first game last year, but you know what? The other game was 17-14. It was a tough game, but we pulled it out. Okay, great. We played well. You know, we're cutting down on the penalties. The things that we need to get better are getting better, and they played us tough because they're a division rival, and we ended up winning the game. Great. KC is always going to be a funked up game. It's always going to be weird. It's always going to be crazy because KC just has a hard on for beating us. And, you know, if we go out there, that KC game, I don't care how the fuck we win that game. Because they're clearly the best team in this division, and they have been for a lot of years now. And however we get to beat them, I don't care. We just get off the snide, and you know, after what, five straight losses or something like that.
The analysis of this season compared to last season can't be more different. Last season we had two seasons of John Gruden. How do things work? How do things go? Oh, we start off okay. We get at the end. This is patterns we've seen. He's got the team he's wanted. Everyone knows the system. Now we can judge seasons as a whole. Because this season, brand new coaching staff, brand new number one wide receiver. They're still it's not a new team every week, but it's a faster evolving team every week. Hopefully evolving good, maybe evolving other directions, right? So it's we could have been, you know, 7-4 last season and know what that meant, know where we're going. Like the past could tell us what the future is on last year's team. Mm-hmm. I don't think the past can tell us the future of this year's team. It sucks we're 0-3 because now we're in a hole, right? Now statistically it's a 12% chance to make the playoffs. It sucks because we're hoping Josh McDaniels is the guy that can do this for us. We don't know, right? He hasn't done it yet, but he's right. That's what I hate about the 0-3 now. Not that, oh, this is our team. This is a team that loses to those three teams consistently. It's like, we're the team right now that does that, but we're constantly changing. Yeah, that's the glimmer of hope.
Yeah, it's tough. Even if we win the next three games, we're still only at 500. That's the shitty part of losing these three games is we can go on a winning, which is three games is a winning streak. Two games is like, I wouldn't really call two games, but three games is a winning streak. We go on three-game winning streak, and guess what? We're only 500.
We thought this middle part of our schedule was the easy part, and we thought this first half was the hard part. We lost to 1-2 teams, and now, like, Jacksonville's a hard game now. Didn't expect that. Bro. Like,
Jacksonville plays hard, man. They freaking run the ball hard. They got some big freaking offensive linemen, and they don't mind freaking running up that score, dude. They don't mind. They don't not. That's one of the things that really pissed me off. It seemed like we were kind of being a little bit more conservative. Doug Peterson is not about that life, dude. He's like, nope, we're putting the foot on the throat and we're keeping going. And Trevor Lawrence is like, I lost enough last year for my entire career. I'm used to winning in high school and college. I want to win. I'm not going to let off the gas. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, you know what? You live by the bomb, you die by the bomb sometimes. And I don't have a problem with going for it and keeping your foot on the gas.
Yeah. All right. We got some catching up to do this week, which just means more videos for you guys. Lucky you. We got to do a preview of Raiders Broncos. I guess the closer we get to the game, the better the preview anyway. Can we start figuring out the injury issues? Because we got three starters in concussion protocol.
God damn.
I don't know where that's going to go. Really good McDaniels.
Yeah. Nothing new on Andre James?
Just not playing concussion. That's all we get.
He was fucking laid out flat, too.
Until then, knock on wood if you're with me.